Dainam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Chapter entitled Parikshit Curse by a Brahmana Boy, Text Number 31. Esha kim nibrita shesha.
Esha kim nibrita shesha.
Karano milite kshana.
Karano milite kshana.
Risha samadhir ahoswit.
Risha samadhir ahoswit.
Kim nu syat shatra bandubi.
Kim nu syat shatra bandubi.
Esha kim nibrita shesha.
Esha kim nibrita shesha.
Karano milite kshana.
Karano milite kshana.
Risha samadhir ahoswit.
Risha samadhir ahoswit.
Kim nu syat shatra bandubi.
Kim nu syat shatra bandubi.
Esha kim nibrita shesha.
Esha kim nibrita shesha.
Karano milite kshana.
Karano milite kshana.
Risha samadhir ahoswit.
Risha samadhir ahoswit.
Kim nu syat shatra bandhubi.
Kim nu syat shatra bandhubi.
Esha.
Esha.
This.
This.
Kim.
Kim.
Whether.
Whether.
Nibrita asesha.
Nibrita asesha.
Meditative mood.
Meditative mood.
Karana.
Karana.
Senses.
Senses.
Milita.
Milita.
Closed. Yikshana.
Yikshana.
Eyes.
Eyes.
Mrisha.
Mrisha.
False.
False.
Samadhi.
Samadhi.
Trance.
Trance.
Aho.
Aho.
Remains.
Remains.
Swit.
Swit.
If it is so.
If it is so.
Kim.
Kim.
Either.
Either.
Nu.
Nu.
But.
But.
Syat.
Syat.
Maybe.
Kshatra
bandhubi.
Kshatra bandhubi.
By the lower kshatriya. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Upon returning, he began to contemplate and argue within himself whether the sage had actually been in meditation, with senses concentrated and eyes closed, or whether he had just been feigning trance just to avoid receiving a lower kshatriya. Translation responsibly. Upon returning, he began to contemplate.
And argue within himself.
Whether the sage had actually been in meditation.
Whether the sage had actually been in meditation.
With senses concentrated.
With senses concentrated.
And eyes closed.
And eyes closed.
Or whether he had just been feigning trance.
Or whether he had just been feigning trance.
To avoid receiving a lower kshatriya.
To avoid receiving a lower kshatriya.
Purport. The king, being a devotee of the Lord, did not approve of his own action, and thus he began to wonder whether the sage was really in a trance or just pretending in order to avoid receiving the king, who was a kshatriya and therefore lower in rank. Repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami do not believe that the king's action was due to his past misdeeds. The arrangement was so made by the Lord just to call the king back home, back to Godhead. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the plan was made by the will of the Lord, and by the will of the Lord, the situation of frustration was created. The plan was that, for his so-called misdeed, the king could be cursed by an inexperienced Brahmana boy infected by the influence of Kali, and thus the king would leave his hearth and home for good. His connections with Srila Shukadev Goswami would enable the presentation of the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the book incarnation of the Lord. This book, Incarnation of the Lord, gives much fascinating information of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, like his Rasa Leela with the spiritual cowherd damsels of Brajabhumi. This specific pastime of the Lord has a special significance because anyone who properly learns about this particular pastime of the Lord will certainly be dissuaded from mundane sex desire and be placed in the path of sublime devotional service to the Lord. The pure devotee's mundane frustration is meant to elevate the devotee to a higher transcendental position. By placing Arjuna and the Pandavas in frustration due to the intrigue of their cousin brothers, the prelude of the battle of Kurukshetra was created by the Lord. This was to incarnate the sound representative of the Lord, Bhagavad Gita. So by placing King Parikshit in an awkward position, the incarnation of Srimad Bhagavatam was created by the will of the Lord. Being distressed by hunger and thirst was only a show, because the king endured much, even in the womb of his mother. He was never disturbed by the glaring heat of the Brahmastra released by Ashwatthama. The king's distressed condition was certainly unprecedented. The devotees like Maharaj Parikshit are powerful enough to forbear such distresses by the will of the Lord, and they are never disturbed. The situation in this case was therefore all planned by the Lord. Omagyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Avanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just close the door properly. It's not. That's why it gets a lot. So, Prabhupada has said that the purports are more important than the verses of the Bhagavatam even, because by the purports we can understand what is not otherwise evident to us in the verse. So we can read this verse of the Bhagavatam, but we'll only get limited realization of what is in the verse. But then, with the commentaries of the acharyas, we can understand things which are unwritten or unsaid, or which are not obvious to a conditioned soul. So when Prabhupada, when he was writing each purport, then he would consult the commentaries of the previous acharyas. So he had one book which he carried with him all over the world. It was like a big black volume, like single volume of the Bhagavatam in small print. And it had the commentaries of 12 acharyas within it. So Prabhupada carried that with him all over the world. And in this very room that we're sitting in now, Prabhupada translated some of this, some of his books, some of the Bhagavatam was translated in this very room. So Prabhupada would consult the commentaries of the acharyas, because in the commentaries of the acharyas we can learn more deeply what the Bhagavatam is trying to reveal to us. So it is That is why Prabhupada said the purport is more important than the verse. Because you can read the verse, but the verse will give you unlimited realizations. Just by reading the Bhagavad Gita, just verses alone, without purports, you'll get unlimited realizations. But your realizations will be enhanced further by hearing them from a realized soul. So Srila Shukadev Goswami is likened to be a parrot. So the example is given that the parrot, he will peck the fruit. He'll take the mango. So you'll come to the mango, and it is said, it's explained in different ways. One way it is said is that the parrots, they know which of the fruits on the tree is the ripest. So they'll look which fruit is the ripest, they'll go for that one. And then they'll peck it. So then the person on the ground, he says, oh, the parrot has pecked that particular mango, so that's the ripest. So then he'll go and pick that mango, and you'll get the juiciest mango. Another way of explaining it is that the parrots come, they see the mangoes on the tree, they peck the mango, it breaks the skin, and because the skin is broken, the tree has to produce more juice, or more nourishment has to be sent to that particular mango to heal the wound, and therefore it becomes juicier. So there's different ways of explaining it. So either way, when the parrot touches the particular mango, we know that is more juicy. Another way is that they say, you know, the parrot is mystical, so when it touches it, it just becomes more juicy, like that. So explain it any way you want. But the point is that when the parrot is touching, then it becomes more relishable. So when the Acharya comments, Shukadeva Goswami has already spoken. So when you read the Bhagavatam, any verse, it is nectarian. No, because Shukadeva Goswami himself has spoken. But it becomes more nectarian when it is that same prasad is then relished by another person. Just like one time, Indrajumna Swami, he got on the plane with Srila Prabhupada. So there were three devotees traveling with Prabhupada, Indrajumna Swami and two others. So they went through the customs, and when they went through customs, then the other two devotees were held back. So they got on the plane, it was just Prabhupada and Indrajumna Swami. And Indrajumna Swami was quite nervous, as you would be, you know, sitting right next to Srila Prabhupada himself. So Srila Prabhupada said, is there any prasad? And Indrajumna Swami, all he had was an orange. So he took out the orange, and Prabhupada saw the orange. Prabhupada said, let us honor prasad. So Indrajumna Swami cut the orange, right, and served it to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada picked it up, just took like one suck, just picked up the piece, like taste it, and put it in front of Indrajumna Swami. And then he picked up each piece, four pieces, just sucked it once, and then put it in front of Indrajumna Swami. And then Indrajumna Swami looked at Prabhupada, because he wasn't sure what to do. You know, normally you don't honor prasadam in front of your spiritual master. You don't sit there and start eating in front of your spiritual master. So he wasn't sure what to do, so he looked at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at him to see what he would do. And Srila Prabhupada said, Maha Maha Prasad. Because it is already prasad. It has already been tasted by Krishna. So it is nectarian. But then, when Krishna's prasad, right, is then relished by a pure devotee, then that becomes maha maha prasad, becomes even more relishable. It's already nectarian. Radha Vallabha's prasadam is like nothing else in this universe. Like I live away from Radha Vallabha, so when I come each week and I taste something which is tasted by Radha Vallabha, it has a taste which is not found in other places in the material world. You can't replicate it. It's very special. So then that prasad, when that is honored by a pure devotee, and you take the remnants, it becomes even more sweet. So the Bhagavatam is unlimitedly sweet, but then when it's commented upon by the acharyas, the pure Vaishnavas, the Amala Vaishnavas, who are intimate associates of Krishna, then it becomes even more nectarian, even more sweet. So the Bhagavatam itself, because it is spoken by Shukadeva, and of the 12 Mahajanas, Shukadeva is the most realized. Because we've discussed before, he is the parrot of Srimati Radharani. So he's the most realized of the Mahajanas. He's considered the most elevated Vaishnava. I mean, he's inside the pastimes in Vrindavan. You know, as a parrot, he sees everything. There's no pastime he does not see. Right? The most intimate pastimes of God in the spiritual world are witnessed by Shukadev himself. And then, who is commenting? Shukadev speaks. Right? This is the Bhagavatam. Shukadev has spoken. And then who comments? Right? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami, who, in their position as Manjaris, because they've already revealed to us who they are in the pastimes of Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur revealed himself, right, I think as Nayana Manjari, and then all the way back, all the Acharyas going back in disciplic succession. And if you get to Gaura Ganondesh Topika, it discusses who everyone is in Krishna's pastimes. So then you have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, someone arrange a chair for Mahaprabhu. Or is there a chair out there? Someone bring it in. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has already described who all those personalities are in relation to Radha and Krishna's pastimes. They are the most intimate devotees. Our disciplic succession is made up of the most intimate devotees of Radha and Krishna. In the spiritual world, inside the kingdom of God, in the world of the lotus of Goloka Vrindavan, in the most intimate place, Prabhupada said the center of the spiritual world is Seva Kunj in Vrindavan, which is the Radha Damodar Mandir, where Prabhupada lived for 4 years, right, at that place. Prabhupada said that is the center of the spiritual world. The most intimate pastimes of God, they take place in that place. So our acharyas, they have witnessed all of those pastimes. They're in those pastimes. They go into places in the pastimes and they experience pastimes which even the gopis do not experience. When Radha and Krishna leave the gopis and go to enjoy very intimate pastimes, only the manjaris can come. Even the gopis cannot come in some of the pastimes. Sometimes the gopis are looking for Radha and Krishna. Where have they gone? Where have they gone? And the manjaris are with them. So these acharyas, they're commenting on Shukadev Goswami's recitation of the Bhagavatam, and they understand the most intimate details of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So therefore they are the most qualified personalities to comment on the Bhagavatam. So it is by their mercy that we understand the Bhagavatam. It becomes revealed to us through the acharyas. And it becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter as each acharya touches it and relishes it and then passes it on, and then another acharya comments, and then it becomes more and more revealed. And then finally, it comes to Srila Prabhupada himself. Right? Now, we don't know who Prabhupada is in terms of Krishna's pastimes, but we do know from the Chaitanya Mangala, by Lochan Das Thakur, it is mentioned that Mahaprabhu himself is in a pastime in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world, and Lord Chaitanya is sitting on a simhasan, a great throne, like a great seat, and he's being abhisheked. A huge maha abhishek is taking place. And on one side, Srimati Radharani and her gopis and her assistants are on one side. On the other side is Rukmini and all of her assistants, the co-wives, on the other side. And they are passing pots of water, and then they are passing to Radha and Rukmini, and then they are abhisheking Gauranga. Krishna is there in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, golden form, enjoying the abhishek with his most intimate devotees. And then he announces, he said, very soon all of us are going to the spiritual all of us are going to the material world. He said, very soon all of us are going. And he said, some will go before me, some will go with me, and then some will follow me afterwards. And then he looks at one particular associate, and he said, the residents of Kali Yuga, they will flee across the oceans to the western lands, to the, like the Malecha Desh, like the very low places, like Australia, like Australia, and America, and Europe, and all these countries. You know, they're fleeing away from Bharatvash, like that. Prabhupada was flying across from Perth, across to maybe Melbourne or Sydney, flying across Australia, and he's looking out the window, and it's just or desert. He was with Harisori Prabhu. And he looked out and he said, Australia. 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 The place of the Astras. And Prabhupada said, the Chaturis used to come down here and practice their Astras. They would fire the Brahmastra and the other weapons to practice them. And that's why Australia is just desert. You know, from the western side all the way across. Until you get to close to the east coast, it starts becoming green. But everything else, if you go out, if you fly over, when you fly into India, you just see it's just like that. So these are very fallen places. So Mahaprabhu says that that many of the residents of the earth, they will flee to these fallen places, to these fallen countries, these sinful countries. And then he looks at one of his associates and he says, but my Senapati, more Senapati Bhakta, my commander-in-chief of my army, he will cross the oceans, right? And he will find them, right? And with the chopper, means like the axe or the sword, the chopper of Nam Sankirtan, he will cut their material attachments and he will bring them back to the spiritual world. So we don't know who Prabhupada was, but we know that he was there at that time, in that pastime. And that's a very intimate pastime, where Krishna takes the form of Gauranga with all of his associates present. And he looks at one person and he says, this person will be my commander in chief. So we know that's Prabhupada. We don't know who Prabhupada is. And Prabhupada never told us where he was. Mm-hmm. One time, Brahmananda Prabhu, he had a dream. And Brahmananda Prabhu said that in the dream, Prabhupada was a young golden boy, very golden and young, like that. And he said to Prabhupada, he said, I saw in the dream you were a young golden boy. And Prabhupada said, if you saw my real form, you would faint. He said, you would faint. Like, so we don't know who he is. And he never told us who he is. Because if he told us, everyone would go around, you know, Prabhupada's a gopi or whatever. They'd say like that. So he didn't tell us who he was. But then Prabhupada said that we will understand who he is and who we are and who everyone else is by chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said, when you chant, then the spiritual master within your heart, when you are ready, he will reveal everything to you. So we will understand who Prabhupada is and who Krishna is, and everything we'll understand through your chanting. But your chanting has to become a lot more serious. You have to start chanting properly. Not this spaced out chanting. Not this unfocused, inattentive chanting. That doesn't get you very far. That will take lifetimes. Bahu jamma kadiyadi shravani. Bahu jamma means you will chant for lifetimes. You can chant for lifetimes, no problem. Keep coming back to ISKCON. Keep taking prasadam and keep chanting, but you won't go back to Goloka. You have to chant very powerfully, very sincerely. So it is being said here that Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that the devotee Parikshit Maharaj, he was wondering, why did he perform that activity of putting the snake, the dead snake, as a garland around the rishi, the great sage. What was his name? Shamika Rishi. So he put a garland around. So then he's wondering, why do they do like that? Why do they do like that? So then it explains here in the Bhagavatam that, you know, he was overcome by thirst and by hunger. You know, when we become very thirsty or very hungry, sometimes we don't speak very nicely to other people. Does it ever happen to you? I remember one sannyasi was giving class, and he said, if you come to me at 12 o'clock on Janmashtami, 12 o'clock in the evening, he said, you will meet an angry man. Could be fasting all day. So, you know, sometimes when we don't eat or sleep or drink, then we become quite disturbed, and then whoever is around us gets special mercy, special type of association. You have to be very careful when you're dealing with Vaishnavas. When you're dealing with the body, you have to be very careful.
And sometimes I know when I'm like that, when I haven't slept properly or I haven't eaten properly or I'm disturbed, I just try to stay away a little bit from everyone, because I know otherwise I'll just say things which are very unpleasant and I'll just offend people. So you have to be careful. You have to know sometimes when you're not in the right consciousness. And when you're like that, then you just distance yourself, go and have something to eat, go and have a sleep, drink some water, get your head back together, and then you can relate to people properly. You have to be very careful about offending devotees. You have to be aware. So, Parikshit Maharaj is wondering, why did I do like that? And the Bhagavatam says, because he was hungry, because he was thirsty, he became disturbed in his mind. But Prabhupada points out at the end of the purport that devotees like Maharaj Parikshit are powerful enough to forbear such distresses. They don't become disturbed because they're Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, na sochiti, na kankshiti. There's no hankering, there's no lamentation, they're beyond the... You know, after this, then he doesn't eat for 7 days and seven nights. He doesn't drink or eat for 7 days and seven nights. So how can we say that he'd just become disturbed on one day when he just, a few weeks later, then he'd completely fast altogether? So how can we say that he would do like that? Right, it's not possible. So a pure devotee, he can tolerate things which conditioned souls cannot tolerate. And the best example is Prabhupada himself. That in his final days, practically most of 1977, especially from May onwards to November, those last 6 months, Prabhupada was bedridden. And his body was emaciated. And they had to carry him to the temple in a palanquin. And the Kaviraj, the Ayurvedic doctor, they said no human being, because he's basically his kidneys had failed. They stopped working. Basically, that's what was taking place. His kidneys weren't working anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why he stopped eating and drinking practically. Those last 6 months, he hardly ate or drank. He was having like a protein shake, you know, like those energy drinks, you know, protein shake. They'd just mix it up and then he'd drink a bit of that. And then Bhakti Churuswami would cook for him, and then Prabhupada would just have the juice of the khichdi. That was practically what he took in those final, you know, 6 months. He wasn't eating very much. His kidneys had practically failed. So the Kaviraj said that if any other human being was going through the kind of pain that Prabhupada was experiencing, then it's intolerable. You know, it was a level of discomfort and pain in the material body that you could not tolerate. You know, your mind would just be so deceived. You'd have to leave the body like that. But Prabhupada, he could tolerate that. Brahma-bhuta means beyond the body. He was transcendental to the body. He wasn't relating to the body or the mind like that. And therefore, he was above it. Right? And Parikshit Maharaj is like that. He's a Shuddha-bhakta, a pure devotee, an Amala-bhakta, a Kevala-bhakta, Uttama-bhakta, a pure devotee. They don't relate to the body. So there was no, he didn't put the garland on the rishi because he was disturbed. He walked in, he became disturbed, right? But as the acharyas are pointing out, this is yoga maya. This is a pastime potency of Krishna. Just like the whole Bhagavad Gita, right? Arjuna says, ubiyo senior maje ratam stapaya mechuta, right? Then you take the chariot between the armies, right? As soon as it goes between the armies, then Krishna says, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. And then suddenly, yogamaya, right? Arjuna is covered, and then he becomes bewildered, and then he starts, what's going on? I can't do this. Like that's yoga maya. It was Krishna's arrangement. Why? Because Krishna wanted at that point for the Gita to be spoken. So because he wanted it, then that's what took place. Same thing. Third canto, Jai and Vijay go to the spiritual world. Sorry. Four Kumaras go to the spiritual world. And then Jai and Vijay curse, Kumaras counter curse. So it's all yoga maya. Now, pure devotees don't curse each other. They don't speak like that. So the Kumaras were covered by Yogamaya. The Jayan Vijay were covered by Yogamaya. Arjuna became covered by Yogamaya. And now, Parikshit, he becomes covered. Krishna covers him. Why? Because now it's time for the Bhagavatam to be spoken. So then Prabhupada points out that repentance comes in the mind of a good soul as soon as he commits something wrong. So what was his mentality? Right. His mentality wasn't, okay, I'm in Yogamaya, so that's okay, I can just, you know, commit offenses to whoever I want. You know, I'll start putting snakes on everyone, you know, walking around. I'm under Yogamaya. No. A devotee, even a pure devotee, even the most exalted devotees, if they offend another devotee, right, of any rank, right, they immediately rectify it. Right? And that's something we all have to learn as devotees, that if we offend someone, we have to rectify the situation. Right? When? Right? When do you rectify the situation? If you've offended another devotee, when do you rectify?
Immediately.
Right? Immediately. That's your number one concern. You go and find that devotee, right, and you say, I'm sorry, did I offend you? Are you upset with me? You know, can I do something to rectify that? Right? You offer your obeisances to the devotee will forgive you, generally. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says sometimes the devotee is so upset they won't forgive you immediately. You know, if it's a big offense. So then, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says, then you have to serve that devotee. Keep serving until their anger subsides, until they forgive you. Like that. So, what does he do? He's a pure devotee of Krishna. He's an intimate associate of Krishna. Right? But he feels, oh, I've done something wrong. I have to repent. I have to rectify this. So this is the position of a devotee, and that's what we're learning from the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam, if you study the Bhagavatam from Canto 1 to Canto 10, as you go through, you'll see again and again, one of the main things that comes up is avoiding Vaishnava aparad. It comes up again and again and again. Right? Why? Because it's one of the most important subjects in Vaishnava sadhacha, in Vaishnava culture, in Vaishnava behavior. Right? We have to be very careful about offending others. It's a very important point. It can't be overstressed. Lord Chaitanya says it's the hatimata offense. Right? It's a mad elephant. It can destroy your spiritual life more quickly than anything else practically, offending another devotee. And it can be one of the main causes why devotees go away from Krishna, because they offend other devotees and they don't rectify the offenses. So you have to be very careful. So as soon as he found out that he had offended, then immediately he wanted to repent. He felt bad, right? And we're all in that situation. No matter how big or small we are as a devotee, if we offend another devotee, we have to rectify that offense very quickly. You might be a more senior devotee. You might have been around decades longer than another devotee. But if you offend someone, you have to immediately go. You know, might be a bhakta or a bhaktin, but maybe you offended them. So then you have to go and rectify that. So we then see that this gives an opportunity for the Bhagavatam to be spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. And Prabhupada points out that sometimes Krishna creates frustrating situations for the devotee, because Krishna has a plan for that particular devotee. So sometimes we have to recognize when Krishna is doing something, when our life suddenly turns in a different direction. You know, I remember my spiritual master said, not long before he left this earth, he said, fate is Krishna. Destiny is Krishna for a devotee. You know, when our destiny, because sometimes in our life just, it's going along, and suddenly it just goes, just goes off in a totally different direction. You didn't even plan it. Sometimes, you know, you didn't have any plan, you know, but then something just comes in, some meteorite just comes in from another direction and just sends the whole thing, and then suddenly your life just goes, whoa, just goes off in another direction. Right? So for a devotee, he understands that's Krishna. Krishna is doing that because Krishna has a plan. Right? That's a heavy curse. right? Sringi, you will die in 7 days. These brahminical curses. The brahmanas have tejas, or potency. So if they curse, these things come true. That's why, you know, people always want blessings. Yeah, they always say, please give me your blessings, please give me your blessings. Because if the pure devotee speaks, an advanced devotee speaks, or a brahmana or a Vaishnava speaks, those words come true. So people are, please give me your blessing. So I remember Tamal Krishnamurti said one time he was on the train with Prabhupada, and three of them were in the compartment with Prabhupada. Prabhupada would travel around India on a train, even though planes were flying at that time, but he'd always take the train like that. And then one time Prabhupada sent for Tamal Krishnamurti. Another interesting point, Prabhupada did not use phones. He didn't use the phone. Very interesting. Very rarely would Prabhupada use the phone, even though phones were, but he did, and he'd always go on the train, even though planes had been invented. He could have just been flying across India like this, but no, he'd always take the train, and he wouldn't use phones. You know, what to speak of the internet, and you know, it wasn't even invented yet. You know, Prabhupada, and interesting, because one time he was in America and they just invented fax machines. It was in the early 70s. It was like a new invention, fax. You know, you could send like a letter to another. So devotees brought a fax machine. Prabhupada was in New York or something. So they sent it in front of Prabhupada. They did like a telex thing. Sent it across to LA. They said, Srila Prabhupada is here. Please respond. So then they wrote back and said, you know, Jai Prabhupada, all glories to your divine grace or something. And they said to Prabhupada, you know, now we can communicate like this and all over the country, all over the world. Like Prabhupada said, it will simply increase prajalpa. It will simply increase prajalpa. You know, and then Hari Saraprabhu, what would Prabhupada say these days about the internet? It will simply increase prajalpa. Right? Yeah, like one devotee said to me, I know one person said to me, he said, are you on Facebook? I said, no, I didn't know how to use a computer. I'm not on Facebook. I didn't know how devotees have time to be on these things. The amount of emails people send to each other, like Brajabihari Prabhu told me a few years ago, he said he added up all the emails he'd sent back and forth for the last 6 years, 30,000 emails. Like that. Not that these things aren't, they can be used in Krishna service, but you have to be careful. Not that Facebook can't be used in Krishna service. Injadumna Swami uses Facebook in Krishna service very effectively. Bhakti Bringa Govinda Maharaj. You know, everything can be used in Krishna service, but it's a risk also, like that. You have to be very mature in your Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, he was on the train, and one time he asked Tamal Krishnamurti, he said he was in another city in India, and Prabhupada was in another city, and he, because Prabhupada didn't use the phone, he just said to his secretary, he said, tell Tamal I want him to come. So then I think later that day or something, Tamal Krishnamurti was there, and he walked in, and Prabhupada said, how did you get here so quickly? And Tamal Krishnamurti said, I flew, like from, you know, Calcutta to Delhi or something like that. And Prabhupada said, now everyone will start doing it. He said, you should have just taken the train. He said, now everyone will start doing it. And that's what happened. Now everyone, you know, we won't get on a bus and go to Sydney. I remember when I first became a devotee, we used to get the buses to Sydney. We're going, but now these days we all go on the plane. Actually, it doesn't make much difference now because I think Prabhupada's main concern was the cost, wasting. But Prabhupada was very frugal about making money. If you look at his diaries, 1966 in ISKCON, he was keeping accounts for ISKCON. Right? And ISKCON didn't have any money in 1966. There wasn't any money. And Prabhupada would be keeping accounts. Bus fare, $1.37. Butter, 67 cents. You know, accounts. He would not let one. And then what did he do? He, like 1966, he made Brahmananda Prabhu. He made Brahmananda Prabhu the accountant for ISKCON. Because ISKCON back then was Prabhupada, Brahmananda Prabhu, Gargamuni Prabhu, and a couple of dozen devotees. That was ISKCON. So he made him the accountant. And then Prabhupada would bring the receipts to him. That's how particular Prabhupada was. Prabhupada said not one farthing should be wasted in sense gratification. In Krishna context, it was so particular. Every cent had to be accounted for. Even one time he was in his room in Mayapur, and all of his leaders were in front of him, like a room like this, all of his leaders, like top GBCs and everyone was there, sannyasis and everyone. And someone just walked in and gave Prabhupada a donation, some cash like that. And it was on the desk. And Prabhupada, he had to get up and go to the bathroom. So he stood up, and then just before he stood up, he unlocked his drawer on his little desk. He had a little desk like this. And he unlocked the drawer, put the cash in there, locked it, and then got up and went to the toilet. As if none of his disciples were going to steal Prabhupada's money, like that. And then he came back and he unlocked it and he put the cash back on it. But he locked it again. And he just looked at everyone. And he said, you should not be careless with Krishna's money, with Krishna's property. That was his point. He's just making points. He would just make points and make points and make points. He was so... Small Krishna Maharaj in the very final days of Prabhupada's pastimes. This is like a few months before Prabhupada left the planet. Prabhupada, on his Brahman thread, he had one key. And the key was for the Almira, like his cabinet in Mumbai, where he kept like his documents and things. And you'd have to unlock the key, and then when you unlock the drawer, there was another key, and you'd get that key, and then you'd unlock another drawer, and then you'd get another key, and then that would finally unlock the where Prabhupada kept his documents. He had all these systems. So he'd always keep this key in his Brahman thread. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj had this desire in his heart. He wanted the key. He wanted Prabhupada to give him the key, so then he felt like that was a symbol of Prabhupada's trust and confidence. And Prabhupada wouldn't give him the key. Even though Prabhupada was very ill, but he always kept the key tied in his Brahman thread. So finally, he was very ill, so he gave the key to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He said, now tie this on your Brahman thread, keep it. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very happy because he thought, now Prabhupada is trusting me. So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj lost the key. So then one thing you have to always do, if you make a mistake when you're serving your guru, let him know straight away. It's very difficult, but always let him know straight away. If you've made a mistake, and I can tell you, I haven't got time, but I can tell you some really good stories. You know Radha Charan?
Yeah.
Oh, he's in Hong Kong, preaches in Hong Kong. He's going to come back here. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was serving Tamal Krishna Maharaj over in, it was in America. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he just spent an hour, he was writing one of his books, like the Yoga of the New Millennium, those books, he'd written some books. So, he just spent an hour dictating. And then he rang the bell, and Radha Charan came in, he gave him the tape, and he said, go and transcribe that tape and bring me a fresh tape. So I can do another hour. So Radha Charan went out, and just for some reason, without thinking, he got the whole tape and he put it through the eraser and erased 1 hour of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's dictation. So he just went, just like, oh my God. So he just went straight back in there and he said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I just erased the whole tape. Tamal Krishna Maharaj just exploded. He said, get out of here. I don't ever want to see you again. And there's so many stories I can tell like that. But if you ever make a mistake, tell the guru straight away that I made a mistake. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj went to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I've lost the key. Prabhupada said, call the GBC. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, which GBC? And he said, all of them. Tell them all to come to Mumbai immediately from all over the world. The whole GBC. He said, tell them all to come. We must decide what must be done. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj just went out of the room. He's like, oh my God. I've got to call all the GBC here because I've lost this key. So then he had another key. So he went with that other key and then he went and unlocked the cabinet straight away. Just put the other key in and unlocked it. And then, because it wasn't, it's an Indian cabinet. It wasn't even very good. The key wasn't like that. So he came back to Prabhupada and he said to Prabhupada, oh, Prabhupada, I used another key and it opened and now I can get all the other keys and everything. And Prabhupada said, okay, it can send it, like, you know, you've saved yourself. But Prabhupada was just making a point, you know, how responsible we have to be. You know, it's just the key, but Prabhupada was so emphatic, you know, call the whole GBC. He used to do things, Prabhupada was so particular, just to drive the points home. You know, and I used to serve Tamal Krishnamurti, and he was so particular, just to drive the point home. Sometimes you just, like, you know, crush our ego, just to drive the point home, like that, how particular we should be. One time, the original story was that Prabhupada was on the train, and there's about three devotees with him. And the Tamal Krishnamurti went out to go to the bathroom, and there was some Indian people in the corridor, and they were trying to get into the cabin to get Prabhupada's blessings. So as soon as Tamal Krishnamurti went in, he shut the door behind him, you know, because he didn't want them to come in to disturb Prabhupada, because they're just going to come in and say, "Oh, you know, Swami, you give us your blessings." And so he went to a talk, and then he came back, and then he got out and shut the door. But as he shut the door, the man kind of put his head there, and then Prabhupada saw him. And then, you know, Prabhupada was very considerate, so he said, "Come in." So they came in. And then they said to Prabhupada, they sat down, and Tamal Krishnamurti, you know, was sitting there, and I think a couple of other devotees were there, and Prabhupada was there. And they said, "Swamiji, please give us your blessings." Mm-hmm. And Tamal Krishnamurti, as soon as they said that, Tamal Krishnamurti just went, "Oh." You know, it's like, why are you wasting Prabhupada's time for? You know. So then Prabhupada said, and the man had his two sons with him, like his two sons. And he said, "Swamiji, please give us your blessings," like that. So Prabhupada said, "Give me one of your sons." He said, "Give me one of your sons." He said, "I will train him as a brahmachari." He said, "This is my blessing." He said, you give him to me, I will train him, make him first class, like that. So the man became very uncomfortable. He said, "Oh, Swamiji, no, it's okay." Like that, he was like, you know, stood up, and then he left and took his sons with him, and everyone just started laughing. Even Prabhupada started laughing. Like, so people they ask for blessings sometimes. They always come, you know, "Please give us your blessings, please give us your blessings." But we have to understand what real blessings are. Because sometimes Krishna, he just creates a situation in our life which is his mercy, it's his blessing, it's destiny, it's fate. And sometimes we can't understand, why is Krishna doing this to us? But after some time as a devotee, we have to let go, so to speak, and we have to understand and just say, Krishna has an arrangement here. I don't understand what's going on right now, right? I know in my life it happens so many times. Suddenly my life just gets derailed. You know, I'm going along happily, I'm doing my service, I'm thinking, this is what I want to do, this is what Krishna wants me to do, this is what the movement wants me to do, my spiritual master, my authorities, and suddenly just poof, the train just jumps off the track and just starts heading off in another direction. And it's like, what's all this about? But we understand, why is that happening? Because Krishna must have a purpose to fulfill. So when Parikshit Maharaj, when he was in that situation, he didn't try to counteract or to, how do you say it?
Avoid.
Avoid it, or, you know, try to, like, what's the word? Yeah, judge the situation, or I can't think of the word. But when he understood the situation, he accepted it. Okay, obviously, like, I've just been cursed. The Brahmin comes, right? And the Brahmin says, "You will die in 7 days." He says, "Okay." Obviously, that's Krishna's desire. There must be a reason for this. Goes to the Jamuna, to the Ganga, sits down, right? All the sages come. Finally, Shukadev comes, then Bhagavatam is spoken. So then he understood, this is why Krishna arranged like this. So we have to accept what Krishna is doing in our lives, because Krishna has arrangements, he has desires that he wants to fulfill. So we don't we don't try to put all our energy into stopping things sometimes. You can, and usually we do in the beginning, but then when it's just obvious that Krishna is taking you in a different direction, then you have to surrender to it and see what Krishna desires, because Krishna has a plan to fulfill with all of us. You know, so sometimes we just have to accept that. Okay, so we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
So, like we say, the pure devotee is always one with the desire of the Lord, you know, the desire is the same as the Lord, and he is always acting according to Krishna's plan. So, but we see in Prabhupada's case, he was always preparing to come to the West, but he was, he wanted to earn money before he came, and then he kept losing money, but he kept, doing it again and again until he finally. So can you say that was, Krishna's, it was like Yoga Mayaka bringing Prabhupada, it was Krishna's plan that, Prabhupada, thought I will earn money, whereas, it was Krishna's plan that he would not earn money, but he kept trying it over and over again?
Yeah, that was ultimately Krishna's plan. And Prabhupada actually said one time, he said, I had an argument with Krishna. He said, I want to go to the West as a rich man. And Krishna said, no, I want you to go as a poor man. And Prabhupada said, no, I want to go as a rich man. And Krishna said, no, I was a poor man. And then Krishna won.
So then why did Prabhupada did not act at that time according to Krishna's plan?
Well, you could say that he was trying to fulfill the order of his guru, because how do we know what Krishna wants? We know what Krishna wants through the instruction of the spiritual master. So what was the instruction of the spiritual master? It was to preach Krishna consciousness. So he was doing that. He started Back to Godhead magazine. He was doing that. And then the instruction of the guru was to go to the West and preach. So he was working his whole life. His energy was going into doing that. And he actually accumulated a great deal of wealth at one point. But then things got taken away. So, in life, sometimes it takes time for things to be revealed. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj pointed this out one time. He said that, even though Prabhupada was Prabhupada, but we have to understand, even though he was a pure devotee and he was empowered by Krishna, but there was a great deal of struggle involved. It wasn't all easy. There's a human side to Prabhupada as well. Sometimes we think, oh, Prabhupada just crossed the ocean and just spread the movement around the world, but that was at a tremendous amount of sacrifice, which was there. So, we have to see, both sides of things. And even Prabhupada said in Los Angeles in 1970, he had that new temple at Watsika Avenue, which is his world headquarters in LA. Nice temple and everything. And then a situation arose, which we haven't got time to speak now because it's a complex situation, but a situation arose where Prabhupada had to leave and he went back to India. He flew through Tokyo and went back to Calcutta. So Prabhupada actually went to Rukmini Dwarkadish. He said that later. He said, I don't know why you're sending me away. You've just given me this temple, right? I've just installed you. The movement's just starting to expand. And then suddenly, you're sending me away. But then later on, Prabhupada said when Mumbai, when Juhu was built and Vrindavan was built and Mayapur was purchased, then Prabhupada said, now I can understand why Krishna sent me away. Because Krishna had a plan. So sometimes, even for the pure devotee, it takes time for those things to be understood or revealed. Does that answer your question? Yeah, it's a little difficult to answer those questions because, Prabhupada is Prabhupada. So he can directly speak to Krishna and those things. But then there's the human side as well, or the struggling side in this world, in the sense that, Prabhupada had to cross so many obstacles. He had to struggle so much to show us, the example of what we should be doing while we're here as well. So, is that okay? Any other question, comment?
So you mentioned Sarah Kunj and Davin considered to be the parents of Davin in the past times. But it's mentioned in Bhattacharya's scene that he's radical, but if you want to say it's like the double, over down and all the places on the border and radical, and the Sardinian Commission and Shimatera. Could you elaborate on that? So which one? or they're just according to different opinions of ones, one is the highest and the other one is the highest.
In Krishna's pastimes, there are three yoga pits. Yoga pits means the meeting places, right? So the first one is Brindakund, which is just near Nandagram. That's the morning yoga pit. So just after breakfast, they have a very brief meeting there, Radha and Krishna, at Brindakund. Second yoga pit is Radhakund, because that's the midday pastime place where they spend. Krishna arrives there just before 11 o'clock in Ashtakaliya Lila, and he leaves there about 3:30. every day. So that's the yoga pit. It's actually, if you go to Radhakund, there's a temple there of Radha Govinda, which is, it's where the tongue of Govardhan is, like the Jeev Mandir, like that. If you go there, that's where it is, that place. So that's the yoga pit. That's the second meeting place. And the third yoga pit is the Radha Govinda Mandir in Vrindavan, which is in that Seva Kunj area. So where that is, that's the evening yoga pit. So when they go in the evening, just before 11 o'clock, they all escape, and then they all head into the forest. And then they rendezvous at that place. So they're the three yoga pits, three meeting places. So Prabhupada, to say that one is... Radhakund is said to be the most intimate, like that. Most intimate, definitely in the midday pastimes. But then in the evening pastimes, then that's the most intimate place. So, but if you say both are correct, like that. But if you look at it all, then Radhakund is supreme. Like that. Does that answer your question? Like any other question?
One comment and one question. About when you were saying about Kaviraj, actually, Philippova had a very bad kidney and so much of glycemia, hyperglycemia, that it was completely failing. Then the other kidney was working. My question was, why Philippova had two heart attacks on the boat? Any significance?
Prabhupada actually said that he was supposed to die at that time, like according to his astrology. There was one thing, he said it was mentioned one time that he was meant to die at that time. But he actually said that Krishna appeared to him after the second heart attack and sat on the side of his bed all night and massaged his chest. Like that. And he said then in the morning, and Prabhupada actually wrote, if you read the Jaladutta diary, he says that if I had have had a third heart attack, I would have died. Like that. He said it was so excruciating, the pain. Like that. So you could say, why did that happen? The main reason why any obstacles were there in Prabhupada's pastimes were to show us, one is to glorify Prabhupada, that his position is so pure and so exalted that he was unstoppable. And the second thing is to show us an example that we don't have any excuses to give up our devotional service. If we don't have any excuses, because if you say, well, I can't do my service because of this, 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 or this, but then you look at Prabhupada's life, everything he went through, we don't have any reasons to
slow him.
Yeah, because, Prabhupada kept going under all circumstances like that. Great, great difficulties. Any other question?
Like when we look at Prabhupada's life or other exalted devotees' life and the difficulties they went through and they still continue the devotional service, sometimes we have some small problems and then we sort of try to encourage ourselves looking at the way they did their service and devotees, and then sort of sometimes mind says, oh yeah, but they were pure devotees, they can do it, but sort of new and sometimes we get these arguments when we sort of speaking to other devotees and go, he can do it, he is a pure devotee. So how do we understand that?
Well, one thing is Prabhupada said inside the instruction of the spiritual master is the ability to fulfill that instruction. So if you've been asked by a senior devotee or the spiritual masters to do something, that means they're also giving you the ability to do that thing. So they give the instruction, I want you to do this. The ability to do it is also inside that instruction. So you can't say that, I can't do it because I'm not a pure devotee. And the second thing is that Prabhupada said, so become a pure devotee. Stop making excuses. Prabhupada said, why are you not a pure devotee? I've told that story when he calls Guru Kripa Prabhu in. I won't tell it now because it'll take too much time. you know, Prabhupada calls Guru Kripa Prabhu into his room at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'll tell you the story later. And then at the end of the pastime, and Prabhupada says, "So why you are not a pure devotee?" He says, "Oh, Prabhupada, you're a pure. You're, why are you not up translating in the middle of the night?" He said, "Prabhupada, you're a Paramahamsa." He said, "Why are you not a Paramahamsa?" Like that, so become a pure devotee. Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.